Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-sized enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Ryan.
Doing just great. Just doing great.
We are broadcasting from the McCormick Place Convention Center in Chicago. We're down in Chicago Loop. We're here at FabTech 2015, what I like to call Fabulous FabTech 2015. They have got so much going on in 750,000 square feet of exhibit space on two separate floors. It's amazing. There's 50,000 people who will walk these floors. They have 1,700 or 1,800 exhibit booths, thousands of exhibit people here to communicate, chat with the folks that are here. And one of the folks that we have here today that we're very excited to talk to, which is GE. We all love GE. It's a big company that brings good things to life, as I remember as a person was a kid. We have Karen Kerr, who's the Senior Managing Director of Advanced Manufacturing. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thanks,
Tim. Good, we love to have you. What's going on with, what group are you in? What are you doing in that group?
So, I am in the GE Venture Group within GE, and our team is really focused on being external innovation staff for the GE Corporation. The Ventures Group consists of an equity investing process.
Do you find that because of the associations and so on that you're working closer today with your vendors than perhaps 10, 15 years ago?
I think the vendor relationship has changed quite frankly.
Yes.
And I think it's changing to one of more partnership.
Right.
Right? Where the vendors are co-collaborators and co-designers almost.
Right.
So we're looking at how can we We're trying to get rid of paper. Sorry, Weyerhaeuser. and really go from our CAD diagrams and our models and be able to do all the engineering and simulation with that. But then how do we make that accessible to our SME partners? And quite frankly, today we have some conclusions around that in terms of how do we deliver PDFs of models, but ideally what we'd love to be able to do is have them interact with the model in a safe way and help you iterate on the model for manufacturability and processing. So we're working on, we're looking at technology to help us get to that, Mulholland, at least in the venture group, and I know that many of the groups like the Autodesks of the world are looking towards that as well.
Tim, what's the name of the group down there that is doing 3D model making?
NECDIE, group number N14,055. And they have 16 screens all locked together where they're displaying the model in 3D if you put on the 3D glasses. And they can immerse you with the model, and they have all the spread across the floor or above your head, moving around you, so you can actually see how to work that
It's doing exactly what you said. You've got to go over there.
Yeah, so we will go over there, and that is amazing. And within our global research center in Vista, we have built a case so that we can do a case. I think this is the part of the case. It sounds sort of Neanderthal, but it is really high-tech, state-of-the-art virtual reality room. So that we can display our jet engines and our turbines and really have folks look around and see what's going on.
You could actually make your engine using their technology. It's amazing. We're going to be down there filming this afternoon.
Next time, I'm going to go.
Make sure you use the name Manufacturing Talk Radio now.
I will absolutely do that. So we think virtual reality is going to be an exciting technology.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you're here in Chicago, so you may not get the New York Times, but you could get a virtual reality project in the New York Times, and got Google Cardboard virtual reality headset, and so that's a pretty exciting one. But it's an important technology for us. Augmented reality is also an important technology for us. So augmented reality is where you are looking at the real world and just in time delivering information about what you're seeing in the real world. And that can be a game changer for us in our manufacturing, because if we have complex reconstructions, we can give that to folks in the factory and have them visualize it as they do the work hands-free. So we just invested in APS Lab, which does software for augmented reality applications in the industry. And we think that's going to give us 30% efficiency.
Wow. It's huge. Stockholders will love you.
Well, one other exciting thing that we got going on the touch-based with, particularly advanced manufacturing, is that.
Well, you guys have a pavilion on and that's been a for us. Our aviation business is printing the fuel models and so one of the important considerations there is really how do we do that in a faster, more open source form. Maybe we're the 3D printer manufacturers and we study the materials, but can we deal with our aerospace materials in an open source manner? So we've made an investment in my team at a company, Waterfly, that is building one of these open source UMLS type 3D systems. So that's one of the things that we're looking at. We've Dolphin Slate and inviting their company, Optimus, which is more of a big step way of printing and putting down metal. And that, I think, is going to be important for the parents as well, to put additional metal on.
Right.
So, you made an interesting point earlier, Karen. You do have 30,000 suppliers. 10,000 of those are small and mid-sized enterprises. And I'm not sure that everyone listening appreciates the GE doesn't just build it all itself in the process, but you've got tens of thousands of suppliers out there that you're working with. Those are big numbers.
We absolutely do. We have 400 factories, about 350,000 people, but we still need suppliers to
And
a big part of what we're engaged in our efforts around, we call it the digital thread, this sort of notion of connecting from the beginning of the product to the end, a big part of that is connecting that supply chain. So we are definitely looking to do that. So we talked about augmented reality and virtual reality. We talked a little bit about 3D printing. Another area that we're focused on is advanced robotics. We invested in a company, Resync Robotics, which is making a form of collaborative robots. And oftentimes you walk around these shows and they have industrial robots and the industrial robots are in the stage.
Right.
And you shouldn't get near them because it's dangerous.
Do you walk out and hand out checks as you buy up these companies right at the show?
Well, we're at the show looking for interesting technologies and interesting investment opportunities.
Yeah.
But Resync is exciting to us because it's one where people can work side by side with the robot. So the robot does the things that's repetitive and dull, and maybe even slightly dangerous. I was just back from China visiting one of our healthcare factories there. You know, we do all sorts of CT scans. If you want to check radiation? Well, rather than having a person in the room checking the radiation, wouldn't it be better if you could have a robot in there and somebody else is avoiding the radiation?
Yeah,
absolutely. So we're looking at how we leverage robotics and automation to really make the workplace a safer environment for folks.
You have to bring in Baxter, I think is the name.
Baxter is the name of
That's
the
right.
unique robotics.
That's right.
We're
not just pretty faces.
Yeah, exactly. And they just released their second robot, which is called Sawyer.
Right.
And Sawyer is a one-armed robot that is more precise and the longer arm. So we're excited about that. I mean, there's tons of applications in our factories. And I know, again, I'm just back from China. China is in the process of coming out with its 13th five-year plan. And a big part of that 5-year plan is they're made in China 2025, which is very focused on advanced manufacturing and robotics in particular. So we're excited about that.
So they're going to get all those people from the rice paddies into the factories and use iPads to make 3D or additive.
I think what they're finding, and certainly what we're finding in our factories in China, is that wage rates are going up, and the people don't want to leave the rice paddy.
I know. Because you're giving up a whole lifestyle.
So that's an important one. With wages going up, it's tough to find people. The turnover is pretty high, so they're looking at automation technologies. But candidly, we're looking at them here in the U.S. just for the types of things that I'm talking about.
Sure.
We think that our employees will be doing higher skilled work. So I think the nature of what it means to be a manufacturer and the kind of digital skills that you have to be a manufacturer will change. We certainly see that. We opened up our GE Digital in San Ramon, which is just in the Bay Area, and hired 5,000 software engineers because manufacturing is a software-driven business.
Sure. What do you think about people skills? The 360,000 employees and the big concern of everybody is the skills gap. How is GE addressing that? Is that a GE university or working with local colleges? What's the fact?
We've got a few things on that. did a pilot as part of our GD Garages, where we had some of our people learn to do some of the 3D printing type tools. I know it was a big concern of our HR group.
Right.
And he's famous for his program training, but certainly getting digital skills is a huge component. And candidly, you know, in any company, we have some turnover, and I think as we bring in folks, we're certainly looking for manufacturing skill sets as well as some of these new digital skills. You know, we have that.
This is a GE garage, but it's a curve, and we've read something about it. Can you share a little bit about what you know about the GE garage?
I guess I would describe the GE garages as almost like a pop-up gallery where we've done rotating exhibits in a number of cities. We did one in Chicago a few years ago, where we will bring some of these tools like a desktop CNC, some 3D printers, some electronics assembly things, and really open that up for kids and people, actually, and adults as well, to get some hands-on experience with some of the tools. So we've done that. We've in addition to Chicago, I think we were in Detroit, and now we've been doing quite a bit of them in Athens. And what's interesting there is, as we're selling our power equipment in Africa and setting up some facilities in Africa, leveraging the garage down to more of a permanent installation to help local business.
Right. We just had Dr. Fitzpiel on the show, and he was talking about Africa. We've heard a couple of times before that Africa may become a feeder nation for skills coming into Europe and the United States because of the education that they're putting into the youth in Africa. We're going to need them here.
You know, we're a global business, so to a large extent, we have that facility all over the world. And so we're happy to employ folks all over.
Yeah, well, you'll certainly have
that. And certainly Africa, I think, is going to be an interesting play. Again, I think the Chinese are doing a lot in Africa.
Yeah, I would agree. And have been.
And have been, yeah.
Talk a bit about the future of work. You know, you mentioned that you see your employees doing a higher skill set work. And that's kind of the undercurrent that we're hearing as well. You know, we don't know quite where blue collar is going to settle out, but certainly skill sets have to be brought up. How's GE doing it? I look at that.
Again, I think that's a really huge, that's a huge issue for us. The first thing I have to say is this, and having invested in robot companies. Robots, there are a lot of things that robots cannot do that people can do. And even to picking up and manipulating things. So there's still going to be people. I view robots as really augmenting a lot of the skills that people have. And we're doing a lot in the artificial intelligence area as well, and leveraging big data to get insights and then apply some artificial intelligence to that. And candidly, I think that's really also an augmentation and just helping them to do their jobs better. In terms of, you know, what does the future of work look like? Our economists are still trying to figure that out. I'll say that, but I do think that there's certainly going to be a premium placed on ideas and the ability to design these new advanced products, and we think we're very good at that. And we will leverage lots of advanced computation to help us simulate these advanced designs and sort of test in silico more often. Which I think is going to ultimately help to reduce the cost of producing new products. so we'll certainly be doing some of that. We'll be doing more in the automation, but quite frankly, we need to, one of the big knocks on automation is certainly we need the people to actually be able to program.
Right.
Right. So that's going to be a lot of it. What's really cool about Baxter is that you don't have to have a PhD in science.
Right. You never know.
and I say, well, we still need to monitor our assets once they're in the field. We're about outcomes for our customers and helping them get what it is that they need. And so we're looking at how do we leverage drones and, quite frankly, autonomous road vehicles as a way to collect information about how our assets are performing in the field. Part of that digital thread end-to-end look at the product.
A little bit off topic, and I don't know if this question really should be directed at you, but I'll throw it at you anyway.
Sure,
Ex-Im Bank has been a very important government tool for big business as well as small businesses, and Ex-Im Bank is now no more. It will probably be back soon.
We hope so.
Yeah. Now,
we're fighting that fight.
We are too.
Yep.
And I was sorry to hear that GE did move a couple of plants recently, one to Canada and I think one to England, UK, as a result of the fact that Ex-Im Bank wasn't there to support you. Tell us a little bit about what your thoughts are in that regard with Ex-Im Bank and how they help GE and your 300,000 employees.
GE is a digital industrial company. We make industrial equipment. But industrial equipment is smart, but it's industrial equipment. Most of our customers are government entities and hospitals and the like. And candidly, when you think about standing up new hospitals, electrification, those are the, oftentimes you're looking at developing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the ability to finance that is a huge deal.
Sure, even for GE.
Even for GE, it's a huge issue. And I think it helps the companies that we're selling.
Sure.
Yeah, both sides.
And candidly, our ability to continue to sell equipment helps us back here in the U.S.
Right.
It's a huge issue. That's one that our government relations folks and Chaplain and the team are working on.
Yes, we had talks with Debbie Jekyll on the show when they were battling this with alcohol. She actually stepped on top of the hospital. We were very glad that it got approved finally through the House. We're very strong. And my voice, my brother is a political country outside the U.S. puts into their request for proposal. And if you have to have an Ex-Im Bank in the transaction, because that's the deal helper. And if that's not there, even GE can't do it.
We're not the only group impacted by this. I know Boeing has lost orders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're here in Chicago too. So I think for industrial companies like GE, like Boeing, it's pretty important.
It's pretty important for those 10,000 small
businesses. Exactly, who are our suppliers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because they want to hire
people.
So the 85 other countries that do have an XM-like facility set up, and we have a Congress that doesn't get it, I'm feeling the urge to start picking on Washington. Control me. Stop me.
You know what? Well, I think we're going to join you in that effort. We are joining you in that effort.
It's difficult to believe that they're not doing what's right for the country. The fact that it helps the 12 million people that are in manufacturing. It helps the balance of payments between countries. It's just astonishing that they are not in tune.
Let's see if Congress can actually get anything done.
Tune in tonight and see the next Republican debate.
Yeah, right.
You'll see if Nani is doing his devilish deeds again.
Darren, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners as we wrap up this segment? We heard, just thanks for being on the show. It's just terrific to talk to you. Very knowledgeable. What you're doing and what GE's doing. Anything else you want to wrap up this with as we kind of go into a commercial break here tomorrow?
Maybe I can put in a plug on my keynote. So I will be talking about advanced manufacturing and sharing some thoughts about our brilliant factories within GE and more on the future of work that tomorrow morning. I'm giving a keynote here at the conference.
What time is your keynote?
I think my keynote is at 8 o'clock. It's at 9 o'clock.
And
9 a.m.
When you say brilliant factory,
what's a brilliant factory? So brilliant factories are when we're making our brilliant machines. And really, these are sensor-enabled factories where we understand what's happening on every machine. We understand where the work in process is. We can connect with our supply chain so we can manage work through and the building of equipment through the plant floor machine. And we can capture information about the asset and then leverage that for troubleshooting or what have you.
So
software does it take to do, you know, talk about big data. I'm thinking server farms the size of this building and form equipment.
We are, in fact, we have built out something that we're calling the Predix platform that's going to help us manage our wind turbines, our gas turbines, our jet engines, our factories, our locomotives. They will help us manage the assets we produce as well as our factories. And there is a lot of big data and a lot of mining of that big data for insights that help us optimize operations of assets for our customers, and operations
of our manufacturing assets for our customers. Great. Fascinating. We talked to a couple of folks at GE who are actually selling components to that software.
Okay.
The manufacturers, because you developed it for yourself, you can get a clone of it. Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, we're about delivering outcomes for the customers. Mm-hmm. And so the customers want to be able to get access to Predix and to applications that leverage Predix and the data that we're collecting off of the machine. And if they can do that and save 1%, that's huge efficiency gain for their line.
Right.
In terms of power saving. So we're just trying to deliver outcomes for customers and ourselves and hopefully our shareholders.
And do they still use GE Brings Good Things to Life? I know they did when I was a kid.
I think that's gone.
Yeah, I love that.
Imagination at work.
Oh, that's
imagination.
If you think about it, I mean, some of the things that we've been talking about, virtual reality, robots, drones, that's a lot of imagination.
Yeah,
I was putting it to work.
It clearly is.
Exactly.
I want to thank Karen Kerr, Senior Managing Director of Advanced Manufacturing, for GE, for being with us today. We certainly enjoyed having you on the show. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Karen, thank you for joining us. It's been very enlightening.
Thank you.
Really fun.
Maybe we'll get down there and see your keynote tomorrow. Okay.
Radio will be right back.
How do you keep your business humming? Where do you go when you're looking for quality suppliers of new equipment? Components, MRO supplies, repair services, or even raw materials. 30 years ago, you would have turned to the Thomas Register. Today, those big green books are better than ever at thomasnet.com, industry's leading platform for product sourcing and supplier discovery. You can easily find that local machine shop, national distributor, OEM, or any supplier having the right quality certification. Fast and free. You can even get to specific products, components, or downloadable 3D CAD drawings simply by entering specifications or part numbers. There's a reason ThomasNet.com has become the go-to supplier discovery tool for procurement professionals and engineers. There's simply no other resource like it, and it's all free. Go to ThomasNet.com today and see how top-notch supplier discovery doesn't have to put a dent into your bottom line.
All Metals and Forge Group manufactures open die forgings in blocks, hubs, shafts, flanges, cylinders, gear blanks, and custom forge shapes, including seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, nickel alloys, copper and titanium for parts and assemblies in aerospace, oil and gas exploration, defense, machinery, transportation, shipbuilding, energy and power, pulp and paper, and many other industries. Visit steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290. All Metals and Forge Group.
American Crane and Equipment Corporation in Douglasville, Pennsylvania is a leader in specialized cranes, hoists, and material handling equipment for industries including aerospace, nuclear, oil and gas, transit, construction, and waste handling. Call 877-877-6778 or visit AmericanCrane.com. That's AmericanCrane.com or 877-877-6778.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting from FabTech 2015 at the McCormick Place. And I'm here with my co-host, Lou Wise. Lou, we're going to be talking with Janine Coons, who is the director of, is it Tooling USME?
It is.
It is. I'm fascinated to find out what this is, Janine. What is Tooling USME?
Tooling USME is part of SME.
Okay.
And it is the training and development arm of our organization focused on developing the capabilities of the manufacturing workforce.
Oh, excellent. So is it a university-style training program?
Yeah, that's a great question. We basically have all the different tools of learning through whether it's books, videos, online classes. We offer instructor-led classes or bring instructors into companies. It's kind of all different forms of learning. It's actually all organized under the SME organization. And we work with such center experts through our membership and those that are in the industry really kind of keep with the latest technology to make sure the content is relevant to today's manufacturing tomorrow.
Okay. Now, when you say you take the instructor into the manufacturing class, that's kind of different.
Yeah. So, Paul, as you know, so maybe I'll say this. We work with not only the educating the schools, we work with high schools, community colleges, universities, and helping maybe augment what curriculum going on in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to industry, we're working with the employers from small shops all the way up to the largest manufacturers in the world.
Oh.
And so to do that, we engage with them to try to help figure out what's going to be a human capital development plan that offers structured training and development that's sustainable to drive their business and operations, productivity, quality, employee development. And in order to do that, you sometimes have to look at all different ways of teaching, right?
Right.
And often we'll have employers ask us for certain content or help that really requires us to bring an actual expert to their facility, you know, and pull a room full of 10 engineers or whatever it might be, and go through more of a discussion about the program.
How many people are involved in
this? So we have, in terms of our employees, we have about 70 employees within SME that are dedicated just to this area.
Yeah,
we're definitely one of the leaders in the industry for manufacturers. We work with all different industries, automotive, oil and gas, aerospace, defense, medical device, you know, just kind of in across a myriad of different technical topics.
Mm-hmm.
The kinds of things we see here. So at Babcock, farming, fabricating, welding, machining, assembly, materials. I mean, you kind of name it, it's a pretty broad range.
Okay. And when you talk about the education that you provide and the work that you do with schooling, I'm very fascinated about what's happening in the school system, and are they throttling up fast enough to fill the skills gap that's here today? What do you do with this?
Yeah, the issue is, as you said, there's definitely not enough kids pursuing careers in manufacturing, which is, as you know, is a big issue for the manufacturing industry. But we do, SME does a couple things. We actually have an education foundation as well. So we are dedicated not only to helping provide state-of-the-art curriculum that is equivalent to industry standards right now, provide that kind of curriculum to the school so that you're getting access to latest technologies and content, but it only gets done so much because if you don't have kids in the classroom, what's the point? And so we as an education foundation also are helping on ensuring that we encourage kids, that we try to showcase careers in manufacturing and kind of really highlight the cool high-tech, high-touch industry that manufacturing is all about.
You and I came up, I don't think it's a really good result, but we came up with the thought that getting the kids involved in a manufacturing environment, understanding what is not the thought of learning and changing.
Yeah.
And a lot of it should be laid back on the parents.
Yeah.
Understand what manufacturing is to them.
Right.
You know, instead of social work, $132,000 a year, is wonderful for those who are helping. Doesn't help you financially compared to $77,000 jobs that kids do
manufacturing. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because sometimes we talk, and even as we're all talking here, we're talking to the converted, we know.
That's right.
We've got to kind of get to those that, we're going to drink the Kool-Aid. but, you know, we want to get to those, as you said, that are outside of our circle, and that those that are kind of perpetuating the whole image of manufacturing to be similar to what you said about parents and career counselors.
Mm-hmm.
It's long getting different counselors that are sitting in front of these young students that are kind of just embarking on looking to where they might go in their careers. And ensuring that most people are actually not influencing people away from manufacturing because of an old perception.
We had a event that occurred the week of manufacturing day.
Yeah.
And we got in touch with one of the schools in New Jersey and invited them to join with us.
Yeah.
And I contacted one of the local high schools here where our plant studio is, and the person involved was a high-level person. Well, we're really not interested in that because our kids are academic. And I couldn't argue the point. I then contacted New Jersey, NJIT New Jersey Institute of Technology, and they hooked us up with the same county Institute of Technology.
Right.
And, you know, they got us 15 kids, and they gave us the bus, and we got the kids down.
Great.
So it was a great event, and their eyes just opened up when they see all the stuff that they could be doing.
That's the thing. Once they see and they get exposure to it, it just changes everything. And they can really see how they can use problem solving and technology, and you know, the next generation grew up on electronics and computers and technology much more than all of us. So to them, an industry that's filled with technology, how can you not fit in school?
Yeah, you know? Right. Now, how young are you targeting your education to?
Our education, really, the youngest is you're talking about high school.
Okay.
In some cases, we do have middle school students that are using some of what's called the really fundamental level courses and classes. But for the most part, it's targeted and really at the youngest city high school.
Okay.
And so you're talking about your career and tech ed programs, you know, your a welding program or a maintenance program within the school and the career and tech ed.
Okay, so we can't have the fourth graders holding a welding torch.
No, we don't want that. No, and what we really like about kind of what we've been able to do and partner with schools is, have you heard that term, flipping the classroom?
Right.
If you, I don't know if you, yeah, if you've heard that, where it's just really kind of allowing kids at night to take our online classes and kind of replace what was a lecture for them, and so that their time when they're in the classroom is very well spent. It's very participatory. It's engaging. They can actually then maybe pick up the welder,
mm-hmm.
or they can get on the machine, or they can work in projects, and the instructor and everyone's more now applying the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So at night they're learning, and during the day they're applying their knowledge in an environment that's much more interactive. So that learning environment is much more beneficial to the student ultimately.
Not the old-fashioned machine shop or metal shop or woodworking shop in high school.
Yeah, probably has to be remembered, and a lot has evolved, as you know. I mean, the technology has gotten far greater than what it was then.
Yes, and I loved my wood shop class in high school. That was one of
how to do.
Well, I can still build a table that wobbles.
Okay.
but it did teach me how to use hand tools.
Right.
And now working with my kids, and they want to fix their bike. And I turn to them and say, okay, get me a needle-nose plier.
Yeah.
And they have to determine the difference between a needle-nose plier and a regular plier and an electrician's plier.
Yeah.
So those you know, people who work with their hands, I think, are a little undervalued in society. And I think it's misguided, because we need people who can work with their hands.
Absolutely.
And what you're teaching are people how to work with their hands.
How to make things. Absolutely. It's critical to our nation. It's critical to our national security, to our economic progress, to our standard of living. And as you said earlier about parents, if we don't start figuring that out in this country, we've got bigger problems.
That's very true. And there's another piece that people may overlook. When you work with your hands, it isn't just, you know, I pick up a screwdriver and I turn it into a screw, or I pick up a hammer and I hit a nail. It's thinking through the issue you're dealing with,
right,
to select the tools to do the job.
Right.
And that's the cognitive creative
right.
development that our kids need.
Yes, absolutely. That whole creativity and complexity of the manufacturing. That complexity and that problem solving is a lot of what sometimes isn't also seen by those parents, and what the challenges that what are challenging and rewarding for you.
Mm-hmm.
Not
right.
only can it be challenging, but to think about that you're affecting national security, economic progress, and standard of living through the kind of jobs that we have in manufacturing is critical.
Are there any groups, associations that you know of that are directly going after parents of teenagers to try and bring them into a whole sort of counseling about, you know, your child is, you know, it's great to go to college and it's great to earn $32,000 a year, but maybe there's a better future for your child.
Yeah, the closest, I would say, of an organization that comes to mind when we say that is, have you guys heard of Edge Factor? Have you ever met Jeremy Mount from Edge Factor?
Edge Factor?
Edge Factor.
No,
Edge Factor. Great organization. We partner with them. They're very supportive. FMA, I know who here is a supporter of them as well. And they really are targeting specifically around the image and specifically around, like you said, parents. And what they did is they took really cool stories and kind of broke down manufacturing. So, yes, we could show the machine, but what they have been doing is really trying to show how you machine a part on a dirt race bicycle or something like that. So that it's kind of that kids can connect that maybe things we do every day.
Mm-hmm.
So the cool things that they need to touch and feel in their lives have components that were maybe machines. And what then that means,
right.
kind of really trying to contextually bring that. And if you guys have seen it, it's really cool. They do a great job.
Is that edgefactor.com? Or?
Yeah, I believe it's edgefactor.com.
So Janine, SME and this tooling you work national?
Yes, nationally and internationally.
Oh, okay.
A lot of our customers, we're working with probably about half the water manufacturing, and then hundreds of small mid-sized companies as well. So when you're working with a large Fortune 500 company, you can imagine sometimes they're, as an example, they could be taking some of our online classes and having a worldwide uses of that for all employees in their entire manufacturing operations worldwide.
Right.
Or when you ask me about inspector-led programs,
right.
We have sent our inspectors all over the world to go train. And a lot of U.S.-based manufacturing companies that have international applications, and they want to take some of the learnings maybe from here and take that out to their clients.
How's the demand for your program? It's got to be rising.
It's growing. You just added 7 people last week, so we're, you know, we're adding, and which is good. We're keeping busy because I think manufacturers are understanding that this is a critical part of their strategic planning. You can buy all the technology and invest in that, but you've got to equally invest in human capital and how that drives KPIs for the organization, whether it's productivity, quality, innovation. And it's all connected
to people's
ability to leverage that technology.
Sure.
And
will become quality
we talked about, and, you know, make
it
at the end of the day,
yeah.
You gotta have people.
Well, absolutely do. Yeah, it's not gonna become a people of society and manufacturing.
No.
That's just that
we're doing. You know, it's like anyone can buy the same piece of equipment, I say. And you and I could sit here with the same piece of equipment, but what's gonna make the difference between what's the output of that equipment is our ability.
That's very true. So if you want to have a differentiator, it's the people behind you. Behind your design, behind your program, behind that, why does it broke down? All of that comes from our skills and experience.
That's very true. That was something that Rusty
Wallace talked about when he was here and we interviewed him the other day. It's the people that, you know, you can buy the coolest machinery and have the coolest tools. That 2% difference between the winner's circle and being in fifth place is the people.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And about 2 seconds.
That's right. It is. It's true. All that makes sense. I hope 2 seconds can make that much of a difference. It's amazing.
Yeah. I think he said, actually, I think Rusty said 5 seconds between first and fifth.
Well, yeah, he mentioned that, you know, when they do time trials, you qualify for where you're going to sit and get the pole.
Yeah.
And 181 miles an hour wins the pole, but the slowest guy in the pack is doing 179. It used to be 15 mile per hour difference, but now technology is just crushing the nails of all the cars are so easily rated. What have you found fascinating about what you're doing? It sounds exciting. It sounds like people ought to be rushing to your door and saying, "Ooh, I want to be an instructor.
Yeah,
you can go and instruct around the world. This is pretty cool."
What
fascinates you about
what you do? You know, it's fascinating that every day, the situations are always different, right? Everyone has a different situation. But I guess what motivates me, one, is the importance of manufacturing. And I came from a non-manufacturing 15 years ago in this industry.
Okay.
And I was one of those people who needed to come from the land of the unconverted to the converted. And I couldn't be more converted, you know, I mean, I'm all in, and so I guess what fascinates me is just that connection of realizing the importance of what happens in manufacturing, and really that connection to our standard living and our current progress. But the key for me that I think is important that I have to get a message out is that for manufacturers not to wait until they have the problem, and not to wait until they can't meet their customer demand, and you know, customers are documenting and manufacturers are documenting that 40% of their workforce is going to be gone in 3 years with a retirement.
Right. So I'm going to stick around. Sticking around.
We may need that.
Well, you've heard of the 30 under 30 program. Well, we're the 70 under 70.
Okay. We have that 30 under 30.
I know.
So, yeah, I just think it's something that we're certainly passionate about getting those best practices for those companies that are at the cutting edge of ensuring that their people are able to take their organization forward into the future. And, you know, we just stay motivated by helping get more of those alternatives because I like to call this analogy about the doctor. And I'll say, you know, you go to your doctor for a physical and you feel really good and you're coming in. And you're like, I feel great today. And then they say, how much water do you drink? And you're like, not that much. And how much sleep you get at night on average? And if you kind of, and as you answer these questions, you know, you start to really feel kind of poorly about yourself.
Yeah.
And because you're doing kind of diagnostic of what is called preventative maintenance or you call procedure.
Right.
So the question is, when you ask companies, what are you doing about your retiring local? Are you working with your local school? Are you opening up your facility to kids? You know, to show. Are you building up confidence? Are you keeping up your, you know? And when you ask those questions, I think a lot of times someone would probably give themselves a D or a C minus.
Right.
And so then you say, well, why? When you know the importance of it. So I think the more we can get better, because everyone kind of knows the skills gap, but I think we're kind of, we're living on borrowed time.
Oh,
and we don't feel that sense of urgency like when we go to the physical until you get your high blood pressure. You know, then
yeah.
You're like, oh boy, I better get on this.
It's a little bit like kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
You know, they know the problem is here, it's coming, and they don't do anything until it becomes critical.
Yeah.
And I think we're at the critical point now.
Yeah, we are.
Almost the tipping point.
Yeah,
yeah. Right. Good choice. See, how about certification for degrees? Does the pooling you offer those?
We do. We have a number of certifications. We have a number of main certifications, so the area of continuous improvement, operational excellence, with a three-level bronze, silver, gold, depending on someone's, you know, level of experience in that area. And we've been a certified body for, you know, 70. And our core certification came out of our first certified nutrition engineer. So I can use three society of nutrition engineers with our heritage. So we had our certification, you know, years ago that somewhat certainly recognized the industry, the importance of the profession, helped create standards for it. We still maintain that profession as well.
Okay, and are you also of the mindset, as many of us are here, that what we're really trying to do is develop manufacturing professionals, not manufacturing work?
Correct. Yeah. At 100%
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of the discussion you hear, a lot of controversy too now about competency based versus time based. The apprenticeship program is coming back, but, you know, called apprenticeship 2.0 is not so much just time and a piece, you know, but more about your competency. So it's not, you know, it's just a classroom. Sometimes maybe we have to look at our model of time in a classroom versus competency.
Right.
When you think about education. There's
just a lot of movements like that. How do we do this better? How do we do this faster? Because that's your point about time and the tipping point.
We've got to make sure we do this efficiently and effectively for future generations.
What's the cost or
expense
to the employer
for companies? So typically what would happen, a lot of our engagements tend to be typically a year or longer.
Oh, wow.
Because, again, people don't, you know, the training program, the education program, tends to be kind of a long journey.
Right.
Structures within the program. We almost try to avoid people doing kind of one-hit wonder, because you just don't come in and oh, I trained you. You're all set now. But so typically what we would do is really assess the situation, what that particular employer needs, and then we kind of scope it out for a proposal. This could range from, you know, if it's on a low end, $1,000.
Right.
There's companies that they're training their entire whole life in their workforce. That's having them down to be a larger, larger scale. It really depends on the program. Because the individual manufacturers have very, very different needs of who they're, how many employees they're serving, how much training they need. It's
right.
Really kind of scale.
Would you help an employer with retention? Do they have training programs in place?
Yeah, we actually just started not messing. Because one of the things back to really helping manufacturers understand the importance of this is getting a sense of urgency. Is of course, then you start to figure yourself, well, then you have to measure it, show the ROI to maybe some of the higher level people who the decision makers are. And so, to your fair point, you have to look at maybe not only improvements in quality, improvements in productivity, but also you can have satisfaction turnover. So, we actually started with our mapping after they did the training, that you see the reduction in the turnover and more satisfied. And I don't remember, it was actually pretty good. They were
there they go now. All the students.
Well, the reason I bring that up is because when you say, well, gee, there's a cost to this, maybe it's a few $1,000s, maybe it's several $1,000s, as Luke attested to it, with
man who owns a business and has been hiring for 50 years. The wrong hires will cost you $15,000 to $20,000 each time you do it.
Or more.
Right?
Yeah.
Because if you're slow at getting rid of a bad hire and you stick with them for a year, well, it's now cost you $50,000 to $60,000.
Right, right. Yeah, and this is it. We try to, and I don't remember the stat, but it's a staggering statistic, the actual dollar that they track. You know, and this is like a national statistic, and I can't remember it, but it was, it's staggering. The amount that it's like your turnover cost, I forget, it was like one and a half times salary, something like that, of an individual, because the time to help onboard somebody,
So the investment in the training program for fooling you really is, the ROI on that is real fast.
We like to do that.
In terms of pulling your own board, if somebody wants to get a hold of you or get a hold of SME, what's your website address?
Sure.
Can you share it with us?
Yeah, it's
fooling you.com
is our website, and you can find us there. Our peer organization, SME, is on
Okay.
Yeah, but
tunanews.com
is where you find all of our education
and all our training. Okay. And there's contact information to reach you in there?
Me specifically? Yes, if you'd like to reach me, I'm Janine Kuhn, and you can give me a reach at jkuhn@sme.org.
Oh, great. Okay.
And on our website, there's, you know, our customer information where you can look for someone. You can even ask for free trial.
Well, congratulations. You're obviously involved in a very exciting component of the industry. I'm glad to hear that you're working with high schools, community colleges, universities, because that's where the action is going to be or come out in the next couple of years, and then for the next couple of decades.
They're holding our, you know, they hold a very key important part, and we all have to. The more manufacturers that can work with their local schools, the better. You know, because they could have been pictured. Treat it as a limited entry, a supplier of a part, you know, coming into your manufacturing operation. This is a supplier of people.
Right.
You should equally be investing in data systems.
Right. Well, I think it's going to be in the not too distant future, in the next couple of years, where you're going to see HR moved out of the benefits and that kind of role, payroll, up into the C-suite, where they're really looking at, okay, now we've got a project, we sold the job, where are we getting the pitch before?
For joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.